This is the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 161. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by Dick Harmon of the Deseret News. We talk about Bronco and whether his seat is hot and how the administration might view his coaching versus how the fans view it. We also talk about the talent level of the offense and defense and whether this can get turned around in the 2014 season. I am then joined by my brother Matt. We talk about Bronco and how we evaluate his performance so far. We preview the Middle Tennessee State game, and we also talk about superhero movies and Halloween. Again, this is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Check us out at loyalcougars.com, download us on iTunes, and listen to us right now. Well, welcoming back on the podcast our friend Dick Harmon of the Deseret News. Dick, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me.
So this is an interesting time period to be a fan or somebody that covers BYU football, a losing streak that is kind of unprecedented, at least in the last several years. The fans, of course, are all over the board, some saying fire Bronco, others standing behind Bronco, kind of a mixture. But you've written a couple of pieces in the last few weeks with some of these losses where you've been pretty blunt about the state of this current team. Where do you think this team is at as far as is there enough talent to turn this around? Is it coaching? Is it both? What's ailing the Cougars right now?
Well, I think this team was a young team coming in, and it had a great leader in Taysom Hill. When he went down, it also became part of 24 sprained ankles, including your other big stud on offense, Jamal Williams, that everybody knows. The other injuries, the three guys in the secondary, and then Alani Fua. I mean, it was the perfect storm for a young team to really encounter a lot of adversity. And, you know, with leads at Central Florida and against Nevada Reno, leads that should have been wins, didn't turn out that way. Some mistakes were made, and it caved in on them. Then it became what it is now, and that's the perfect storm. Four losses in a row, people up in arms, people upset, coaches strained, the players strained. This is really important right now for them to get a win, to go to Middle Tennessee State on the road and try to get something going. And the positives are that they have a real good chance because the offense is working fairly well with Christian Stewart. They've got some starters back. Jamal Williams will be back. Adam Heating will be back. You know, Craig Bills and the Levitt, the safety, they're back, and Alani Fua is making a comeback. So they're starting to get bodies back. And, you know, they really do need a win. If you win, then I think it builds confidence. The players settle down. The coaches are not so, you know, uptight. And, you know, and I think the fans, even though I think they have every right to be upset after being, you know, the record and defeated record and a lot of things set on the table and then just turning the reversal, yeah, that's totally understandable that people are just, you know, going crazy. So that's all part of being, you know, a college football fan and being in a program where really your margin for error is really, really thin, and it all caught up with BYU at the wrong time, during the wrong span, with the wrong type of situation with the injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the injuries, I can't remember rooting for a team in any sport that's had as many key injuries as the Cougars have had this year. One of the things that has been talked about among the fans, of course, is Bronco losing the program. Is he the right guy to be in charge? As someone who's covered the team for a long time, and I know you've got a good pulse on what's going on there, is this something that you think is even being discussed among the administration, or is this just frustrated fans talking, but it's not going anything beyond that?
No, I think they understand and they hear it. They've heard from people who donate money, and you know, these tickets are extremely expensive, and people are making a great investment, and a lot of people are saying, hey, I'm not going to buy tickets, and making their threats and making their stands and that. And that's all understandable. But he's not going to be fired. It's not discussed that we need to get rid of Bronco. That's not happening. you know, he could step aside and resign. He could do that at the end of the season. That would be on him. But, you know, Kevin Worthland, the president and the board of trustees and Elder Hiring, who hired him and interviewed him in his final interview, are not going to say, okay, just be gone and don't let the door hit you on your way out. Not after what's been happening in the program the last 10 years, which is generally being pretty successful. Winning records, going to bowl games, winning most all of those bowl games, which BYU has never done, and they like the direction that the program's going off the field. And so that's not going to happen. It's just not. But that doesn't mean that, you know, there could be a resignation there. And if people want to vote with their pocketbooks and they're upset, then that's going to take its nick, and that's going to hurt the way it hurts. But, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of part of the perfect storm right now. But, no, Bronco, they're not sitting around a table saying, you know what, we need to fire Bronco. That is a fan thing that is raging on message boards and people getting cranked up. And, you know, I've seen lists of potential coaches that would come in. Half of them are a laugh. They would never coach here. They would never be successful here. They would never fit in. Others, you know, it's just something fans do because they're lashing out. Understandably, they want a scapegoat. They're angry. It goes from Bronco to Nick Howell to Robert and I to just about anybody that you want to have, and that's just part of it. I remember the days when Norm Chow was vilified because of some losses, and how could an offensive lineman ever coach an offense and quarterbacks, and let's get rid of him, let's take him to the post, tie him up, and let's just wail on him, and, you know, he needs to be gone. The difference then is that a lot of people talking about it would have their names behind it, you know, or in letters or whatever, and now we have a lot of people doing this kind of thing without ever putting their names to what their posts are, and that's kind of interesting, the change of the times, because they become extremely bold.
Yes, they certainly do, and you know, I remember when we were both working at the Daily Herald, letters that would come in asking for Lavelle to get fired, for heaven's sake. So fans can definitely get worked up. One of the things that has been talked about, fair or not, is, you know, Nick Howell getting the defensive play calling duties, and obviously that is Bronco's specialty. Is this something where you think Nick has been maybe over vilified, or you think it's fair to say that maybe he's a little bit in over his head as a first year play caller?
No, I think, you know, this is the same coaching staff and some of the same roles that were there when they had very good defenses. They had different personnel and experience. You take Alani Unga out of there, your leading tackler, the second leading tackler in the nation last year. You take away Brandon Ogletree, who led the team in tackles, so when he was playing, and you take Kyle Van Noy off of there. And, you know, you have a lot to replace. And right now BYU's two middle linebackers, Manoah Kapakua and Stout, these two guys are kind of struggling. Stout wasn't even at BYU last fall. He was over at Utah Valley or some other school trying to be eligible. He wasn't even in the program playing football. And Manoah Kapakua had played a little bit, but not in the role that he's required to now. Those guys start making mistakes. You try to get them corrected. Coaches, you know, lay the law down. They put pressure on them. They don't respond well to it. Other players try to cover for them by making plays and making mistakes, and all of a sudden 11 guys are out of sync. And so I think a part of that fog is what BYU is trying to work its way through to get certain people at certain positions playing well, making the right reads, being in the right spot, filling the right gaps, taking the right angles, and then everyone else covering their own spot and having trust in those other players to do their job so that they don't have to do it for them and get out of position. So it's all a choreographical thing that with the injuries and everything really got behind the eight ball. Is BYU a great pressure team as far as getting pressure on the quarterback? No, they're not. This year, they just are not that way. They generally rush three. They'll sometimes bring four. They could bring five. But, you know, right now, the way quarterbacks are throwing the ball against them, they've got to, you know, drop eight into coverage. And when the quarterback has plenty of time, they just eat that alive, you know, right alive. So there are so many things that are happening before you even get to coaching. And coaching is going on all the day in every practice to try to correct those things. And how players respond to it, you know, is a whole different set of circumstances. And then you have the talent issue. And then, you know, fans will look at that and say, well, why didn't you recruit the right guys? And you know, and so it's an unending tale of dominoes that you can just play that game over and over and over again. What I will say is that BYU may be one of the only schools in the country where you can sign 25 guys in a recruiting class and 60, 65, 70% of them won't even be around for 2 years. They're not there. They're not there to help you. They're not there to be developed. They're not there to have chemistry with other players. And that's a real challenge for them. So, you know, there are so many components to this that, like I say, the it's really thin as far as the margin for error. And when something gets disrupted, experience becomes a problem, confidence in others become a problem, depth becomes a problem. Those things are really a challenge for BYU, no matter who the coach is, whether it's Brock or whether it's Nick Howell. So I'm not sticking up and saying those guys are totally not to blame, but I'm saying the system that they're in and the way it's operating through adversity is really a big challenge for them right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you definitely heard a change of tone after the Boise State loss the week before. Bronco had talked a lot about execution and how players weren't executing, but then after Boise State, he kind of turned around and said, well, we're the coaches, we're responsible ultimately for the play, good or bad, and making sure that they're in the right spots and know what they need to do. Do you think that change of tone was purposeful, or do you think he just maybe the tone the week before after the Nevada loss came off, to me, Dick, it came off a little bit as, well, hey, you can blame the guys, but you recruited them and you coached them. And I don't think he was trying to put blame, but you know, do you think that change of tone was because of some of the reaction to it, or you just think that's Bronco just being honest both times about what he saw out on the field?
Well, I think the first time he was just being honest and answering the question that the problem is execution. He could have taken it further and pointed out players, but he wasn't going to do that. He could have pointed out his own staff, but he didn't do that then. So he was just speaking honestly. The second time around after Boise State, it was a purposeful, political, team move to take the pressure off those players who were in a fragile state, just got humiliated and embarrassed, didn't play well most of the game. They did have their moments. They forced some field goals and some situations on drives. They had their moments, but they had more bad moments. And so sensing the fragile nature of that team, Bronco did what he should have done, and that's take all the pressure and blame off of the players and put it on himself. And that does a couple of things, because the players know who screwed up. And so they hear that, and they say, you know, the coach is out there taking the blame for us, and we're the ones that made the mistakes. And so it gets them in a mode where we got to do something about this. This isn't fair that they take the blame, which they just did. Where the previous week, some of them might have said, well, you know, yeah, maybe they're blaming us. But he never pointed out anybody. He never named any names. He just spoke the truth. Execution is bad.
Right. Right, absolutely. So let's going forward, how does this turn around? Do you see, I mean, Middle Tennessee State's not a great team, but heck, neither's Nevada or Utah State, not great teams. Actually, even Boise's an off year comparatively for them. Is Middle Tennessee the type of team that maybe BYU can turn this around, or do you think there's a really good chance that that we're looking at 4-5 after Saturday?
Well, you know, actually, you know, Boise State is playing very good football right now. They're head and shoulders about what they were when they lost the first couple of games and lost to Air Force. So they were a very good football team, and they were fired up to play BYU. But you're right about the other teams. You know, Nevada, they should have won. They had a big lead. Same with Central Florida. They had a big lead. Everything boils down to two things right now. One is you've got to have your offense, which is reasonably scoring, you know, 31 points since Taysom got out, 31 points a game. You need those guys to step up and to just lay the wood on Middle Tennessee State. You need to have a 40, 45-point game out of that offense. You need to be running the ball, overpowering them with your size, have Christian have some home run strikes, and, you know, get his completion percentage about 65%, then his pass efficiency about 160, you know, just really unload on them offensively. that takes pressure off the offense or the defense. And then you need the defense to somehow, and you need to scope out the Middle Tennessee quarterback to see what his strengths and his weaknesses are. If he's not an artist, if he's not a passer, if he's not a great force with a great arm who's extremely accurate, then the defense is going to have a pretty good chance of doing some things and making some stops and not letting them have a career game, which they've let some other quarterbacks do that were kind of struggling, going back to Houston and Virginia and Central Florida. So the bad thing is that BYU's enabled quarterbacks to do that because they've had these issues. The good news is you've got some players back that have been injured, and hopefully they're working hard on correcting some of the alignment things that they've had, some gap control things they've had, and some control of the edge, you know, setting the edge. Those are all weaknesses that they've had. If they can correct those, even to a level two or three beyond what they did at Boise State, and the offense comes alive, they can win that game. And the other thing is they do need to win. If they lose that game, the fragile nature of this team would really be in a bad state. And so, this is a very important week for BYU football.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Well, Dick, thanks for coming on. We'll definitely have you on again soon. Of course, people can read your columns and other pieces at the Deseret News. I know you said you're working on a World Series piece on Jeremy Guthrie as well, so we'd recommend folks go check that out. But thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Adam, thanks for having me.
Rise and Shout podcast, Matt. We're going to start this out with a tweet bag question.
Oh, great. Tweet bag.
Tweet bag. This is from Steve. That's at SLarson801. I think that's his area code. Just a guess there.
He's repping the 801.
Repping the 801. What are you going as for Halloween? Matt, I toss that one to you first.
A serial killer.
Would you like to explain that a little further?
They look just like everyone else.
Well, my family, we're doing Wizard of Oz this year. I was the scarecrow at the trunk or treat tonight, which... Not having a brain, not a hard stretch for me.
Perfect costume for you.
Perfect costume. Perfect costume. So we're doing, we did that this year. I wanted to be Star Wars. I was overruled for the second year in a row, but at least I'm not a pony.
Yeah. So. I'll tell you what I really enjoyed was getting the kids ready for the ward Halloween party, and my three-year-old had decided he wanted to be a Power Ranger. We went to the store to look at costumes, and he was so freaked out by everything in the aisle. He decided he wanted nothing to do with Halloween. He was just like, he didn't want to be a Power Ranger anymore. He didn't want anything scary. So he decided to go as Scooby-Doo. It was like the most benign thing he could come up with. But he was a great Scooby-Doo.
Man, I'll tell you, going into those Halloween stores is kind of creepy.
Yeah, it is. It's a little creepy, but we did get him to feel a little bit better that he was protecting himself from all of the ghouls and goblins, because apparently Scooby-Doo in my household is also armed with a pistol.
Oh,
and shoots anything that moves.
Yes, well, that's true.
That's I don't know true. If you saw that episode of Scooby-Doo, but apparently my three-year-old did.
That's awesome.
That's pretty fun.
That's pretty awesome. Well, Matt, let's. Do we have more tweet bags on Halloween? No, nothing on Halloween. But he does
have
ask,
one that was Halloween candy related.
Yeah, we won't do a draft, Steve. But how about this, Matt? What is your top Halloween candy?
Reese's pumpkins. Done. Drops
yeah,
Mike.
Yeah. You had me at Reese's Pumpkin. They're awesome.
Is there even a question, really? Is there even really a contest here?
My question is, I mean, I like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, right? But
right.
The chocolate to peanut butter ratio in the pumpkin / tree / egg is so much better than the regular.
Oh, it's so good.
I just don't understand why they don't sell those all year. You know, I want a star at 4th of July, you know?
Yeah, you could do it every season. or would have its own special, its own novelty Reese's.
Yes, 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 yes. Absolutely.
They've got the Reese's hearts. They do a Valentine's Day.
Oh, the hearts are weird looking, though.
You could do a shamrock.
Shamrock. I'd go for a shamrock. We definitely should do a they should do a shamrock. Yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But I love those eggs.
All the Reese's in the house.
That's what you're going to do.
My wife got some to hand out Friday night. I said, whoa.
We don't hand these
out. Let's slow this down here, sister. Those aren't leaving the house.
So Matt, now we're moving on from one of the greatest things in the universe to one of the worst, which is that loss against Boise State.
We've
just descended from a great high to great low. So
I knew you were going to bring this up.
It's funny that on a BYU sports podcast, I'd bring up BYU sports. But there's one way to solve this, Matt.
Oh, there he goes.
Hearing that?
He's going to drown his sorrows.
Oh, my gosh. I've drank it so much.
Drankin', huh?
I hang out with small children too much. I have drankin' a lot of Dr. Pepper since that game.
Would you say you've drankin' a plethora of Dr. Pepper?
A plethora, Efe? I have drankin' a plethora. I can't believe we're still saying drankin'.
It sounds like it's a villainous monster from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, yeah.
Release the Drankin!
yeah, that's what it is. Good. So Matt, that game was terrible.
Yeah, awful.
But I came to a realization, Matt. Peace was brought to my soul.
Wow.
In the fourth quarter of that game, when I came to this realization, BYU's football team just isn't that good. Now, you sound depressed, but now I can go into games and not expect them to win.
Oh, yeah, somehow that's good.
That doesn't make you feel better?
I don't understand why that's a positive.
So, we just had Dick Harmon on the podcast. I was thinking the same thing. I think Boise State is a team that by the end of the year, losing to them won't feel as bad as it did on Friday night.
That will only be because time has passed and there will be other losses to be worried about.
Stop it. That's ridiculous. No, because I think this is a team that has, where we've turned the bad switch, they've turned the good switch on. I don't think they lose to Air Force again, for example. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
Redo that game. Their offense is playing at a level that they just weren't at the beginning of the year. And their defense was always better than average anyway. But now they've taken a step up. But that being said, it was a terrible loss. Terrible loss, right?
Yeah.
So tweet bag question related to this from Justin Sweeney. That's at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Sweeney!
What does Bronco have to do to save his job? Went out, win bowl game, make New Year's Six next year? Is his seat hot or not? Matt, is the seat that Bronco is currently sitting on hot?
No. And I don't think it is.
Why not?
You can be mediocre at BYU and keep your job. What you can't do is have players get into trouble. Those types of things. Real public issues, honor code violations, legal things. You can't have a whole lot of that and keep your job. I think they've got way more patience for 7-win seasons over and over again.
Yeah, and I don't mean to sound, this may sound a little rude to folks, but it's not meant to. I understand the emotions, and for the first time, probably since the beginning, I have some issues with the way Bronco has handled this year. Besides, the one exception over the years was the quarterback situation with Heaps and Riley Nelson. But this year, I have some questions, but here's the thing. I just feel like fans don't quite get that they're not following a a non LDS church affiliated football program. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I mean, I saw tweets about it's time to open the checkbook and go get Steve Sarkisian. Are you serious?
It's never going to happen.
I mean, it was the Andy Reid stuff for years and years and years of any time Bronco or when Croton was on his downhill slide, Andy Reid was never coming. That was never happening, right?
Andy Reid is not walking through that door.
No, he is not. Neither is Steve Sarkisian. In case you guys missed it, he coaches USC. Okay, and if he gets fired from USC, that's because he did a poor job, and they're probably not going to hire him at BYU. But all that aside, I don't think Bronco's seat is at all hot. I think there are donors who may not donate money. I think there are people that may cancel season tickets. Is that likely? Probably, especially if we lose this week. I think, quite frankly, I think this will be. Losing against Middle Tennessee State is a different level than losing to Boise State or, quite frankly, even Nevada. I still think the worst loss this year was Utah State just because of all the craziness that happened in that game. But I don't know that we need to rate the badness of the losses. Well, Matt, not tweet bag, email bag. Do you say some weird email bag thing?
You've got mail.
That's terrible.
You're terrible. It's terrible.
From Dr. Nick, okay? Terrible. He says, after the bludgeoning by Boise, Bronco seemed bent on taking all the blame for everything from the poor defense to Stewart's interception prior to halftime. Was one of the worst losses of the past decade really all Bronco's fault, or is he simply trying to deflect blame and pressure from the players and his assistant coaches? Matt, what's your take on Nick's question?
Some of it is his fault, but I think that... there is absolutely an element to what he did of protecting and deflecting some of that criticism from his players and other coaches. There definitely is an element to that. I mean, the heat at this point from the fans and having to deal with stuff in the media, it's pretty substantial at this point. So I think understanding that and knowing that that would be the case coming out of that loss, he's going to try and focus as much of the attention on him as far as responsibility for the loss is concerned, as he can, yeah. Especially in light of what had happened over the previous couple of weeks, where he was saying things about there's a lack of execution and the players need to step up, which was all true, and also repeated by players. But I don't think at this point after the Boise game you really have much to gain by continuing to say that.
No, and I agree with you. I think. It's definitely he deserves some of the blame. You're the head coach, right? I mean, buck stops there. But he's definitely trying to deflect from both Nick Cowell, who's just taking a massive beating on Twitter and message boards from people that, quite frankly, couldn't coach a Pee Wee League defense. And I'm not saying that the criticism is entirely warranted. But
that everybody who's criticizing him couldn't coach a Pee Wee League.
Correct. But here's the thing. I look at the players, and my response, quite frankly, is the defensive backfield is not as talented as we thought they were going to be. Right? Fair mm-hmm. to say?
Yep.
Linebackers have been, quite frankly, a disaster. And the defensive line has been solid, but and they're very good against the run, but none of them is good. I shouldn't say good. None of them is a difference-making above-average pass rusher.
Right.
And you add all that together, and what you have is a below-average defense. Right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's the end story. And could the schemes get better? Probably. We pointed out last week against Nevada, they seemed to know what was going on, and there's certainly some things that could be done there. But I'll tell you what, Boise State averaged over 8 yards per play. Do you know the last time BYU had a game where the opponents averaged over 8 yards per play?
Oh, no.
It was Gary Croton time. I mean, we're talking more than a decade. I mean, 8 yards per play is atrociously bad for a defense. I mean, that's historically bad game defensively. I mean, over 5 yards per rush and 17 yards per catch. Okay, and that's not per pass play, but that's every time they caught the ball, it was 17 yards. I mean, holy cow! You know? Like, it was an historically bad game for the defense. But let's go to the offense for a second, Matt. How are you feeling about the Christian Stewart-led offense?
They've scored a lot of points.
They have scored some points, no doubt of that.
Turnovers are still a problem.
Turnovers are a big problem. Three big turnovers in the last two games that have been absolute killers.
You know, I do feel like it has allowed the offense to do some things that they weren't doing before. You know, that there's a little bit more variability to the offense.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, I mean, we're not winning games.
So in Christian Stewart's three starts, and I'm throwing out Utah State because I don't think it's fair to judge him on that Utah State game. In his three starts, the offense is averaging 5 yards per play. That is the worst BYU has averaged per play since 2010. And you remember how bad that offense was. Okay. Taysom's four starts, and again, I'm throwing out Utah State because I just think that screws up everything, and it's too strange of a situation. 5.7 yards, which was the best BYU offense. Well, better than it was a little less than last year. So, better than it had been in last year, and this year were obviously better than they had been previously. Christian Stewart is fine. He's doing what he's been asked to do, but this offense is absolutely morphed. BYU averaged under Taysom 33 pass plays a game. Under Stewart, it's almost 50 pass plays a game. Now, part of that is we've been down in those games, right? But Matt, I've got a solution to all of this, and do you know what that solution is?
You're going to fire somebody.
No. Middle Tennessee State. That's my solution. All right. You know the Football Outsiders, Matt?
I've heard of that outfit.
And their advanced statistics. They have in their combined ratings, Middle Tennessee State is the 81st best team in the FBS. The 90th best offense. You know what a terrible defense needs? A terrible offense. That will make them look better.
And I'm a match made in heaven.
I'm being a little sarcastic, but they need confidence, Matt. Right now, after that Boise State loss, I am assuming they are just beaten down, right? And according to Football Outsiders, we have the 75th best defense, which is the worst rating, if it holds, that Bronco has ever had at BYU. But if it's one of the worst offenses in the country, this could be just the perfect match for BYU. So we shall see. So let's talk a little bit about Middle Tennessee State, Matt. What do you know about Middle Tennessee State? Like as a university?
As a university?
Yes. They're the Blue Raiders.
It's located in Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
Yes. Yes, and that's about it, right?
And I do know that I played a season or two on NCAA college football as Middle Tennessee State at some point several years ago.
Look at you go.
In a dynasty where I let the computer randomly select a team for me.
Cool. Look at you. That's
pretty random
research.
That's it. That's my research for this one right there.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, I don't know much about them as a university. They're obviously not a great program like historically, but that hasn't stopped us from losing to teams this year, most certainly. But I kind of feel like this is just what the doctor ordered, quite honestly. This is, I know a lot of fans are very nervous about this. but the line has changed. It opened, Matt, at 9. The line is now about 4, 3.5 or 4, which basically means, you know, they think we're a better team by about a touchdown, but we're on the road. What has got to happen in this game from your perspective? First, let's start with the defense. What does the defense have to do to make you feel like in the last part of this season that maybe they've turned it around?
Take the ball away and sack a quarterback.
I think both of those would be fantastic. You know what but, I was, would also like to see?
What would you like to see?
I would like to see their quarterback's not a not a massive runner, but if there is a any type of read option where the quarterback runs the ball, you know what I'd like to see? The
Somebody
quarterback him? Not go untouched.
Yeah.
And he is a decent runner, I believe, based on his statistics. You know, maybe not a top of the line runner or anything like that. But yeah, I would like to see that because the last couple of weeks, I just don't understand how those assignments were missed so poorly.
I'll tell you what, he's had a couple of games, this guy.
Yeah, he's had a couple of games.
He's put up some real yardage. I mean, it was Western Kentucky, but he ran the ball 19 times for 125 yards.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, he can run, but I've not seen any tape or anything of this guy, but I'm guessing he's more like, what's the Boise State quarterback? An athletic guy who can run all right, as opposed to, say, a guy like, you know, like Taysom or one of those other great running quarterbacks, right? But he does have a high completion percentage. He's a decent quarterback. But again, these are putting up stats against Savannah State, Western Kentucky. They did have the 3 overtime game against Western Kentucky that you mentioned with the 125 yards rushing. But these are not good teams that he's putting these numbers up against. Now, granted, we're not a good defense, but
no, we're not. But are we better than Western Kentucky?
Yes. Yes, I would venture to say that is likely. So what about on the offense, Matt? What does the offense has to do to make you feel more confident in them going into the last few games of the season?
Well, I'd like to see them hold on to the football. But for me, I'd like to see them better take advantage of, you know, like a Jordan Leslie or even consistently get Devin Mahina the ball. I think that's something that's been interesting this year. And I think if they could figure out a way to do that more consistently, that would also show that they're turning a corner and making some adjustments.
Now, I know this is health dependent, but I think one of the keys to the Boise State loss, though I don't know if it would have made a difference ultimately based on just how bad the defense played, it probably wouldn't have mattered. I was perplexed by the fact that first 3 drives or just the first 2 drives that Jamal didn't touch the ball.
You know. I think they were just easing him in.
I know, but I kind of feel like you got what does that mean though, right? Like, just
what are you saving him for, right?
Yeah, what are you saving him for? Like, this is the season right here. We, you know, you lose to Boise State, and all of a sudden you're looking at complete mediocrity. You know, a Boise State win in Boise means something, right? Doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
As you look back, if you were on that team and you go, you know, it wasn't a great season for us, but we went into Boise and beat a good football program and probably a good football team. One of the things, let's go to the tweet bag, Jed Higginson, that's at Jed Higgy. Does one loss and season over mentality influence the team as it does some fans? One negative of Indy is no conference championship to play for. Matt, do you think that plays on the players? I know fans are big into that. Do you think the players get into that one loss and the season's over mentality, or do you think they're probably a little bit more grounded on the goals?
I think that mentality doesn't affect the players nearly to the extent that it does the fans. You know, these guys are very focused individuals on what they're trying to get done. They've got a team of people that they feel close to. And I think they take a lot of pride in what they do. and want to look back on their careers as collegiate football players with some pride in what they've done. So I don't know that it really does the same thing. Do I think it can be demoralizing for a team if you feel like you're at a place where you have nothing to play for? But frankly, at this point in the season, that would be true if you were in a conference.
Well, at this point in the season, say we were in the Mountain West Conference, for example, we'd have 3 Mountain West Conference losses. I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah. But I think in any season you lose a Taysom Hill in the first weekend in October, and I think that's gonna damage your morale
now,
more than a single loss by itself would.
Oh, absolutely. And I know some people will jump on me for saying this, but I do believe that it's true. I believe that if Taysom Hill stays healthy, we lose 1 or 2 games this year, and that's it. I think the cascading effect of his injury is hard to quantify because everything changes, right? The defensive mentality changes. It goes from we can bend and not break and Taysom will bail us out, right? To, mm-hmm. Oh, crap, if I miss this assignment, we might lose. And the defense is young, and I think, though I'm a stats guy, this is a mental game, right?
Yeah.
This is not just a bunch of robots out there playing. These are human beings. And I think, while Jed's got a good point on, I do think there are some players that probably that matters to, but if you watch Jamal, if you watch Jordan Leslie, if you watch some of those guys in the Boise State game that were playing hard all the way through, I would say there's a good core of that team that this one loss and done thing is not how they motivate themselves. No. They are still, Jamal, when he came in and got in the end zone, he was trying to fire everybody up. And it was probably too late. But actually, it probably wasn't. We were still in the game at that point.
Yep.
Without that interception at the end of the half, who knows, right? Who knows how that game plays out. So let's get back to Middle Tennessee State, Matt. 4-point spread. Are you going over or under on the 4-point spread? BYU is the favorite. And are you going to speak with your brain or your heart? And remember, I don't have a brain. I'm the scarecrow.
Oh, that's right. Can I be the Tin Man and not have a heart?
Yes, you can.
I would say that BYU does not cover the spread.
I'm going to say they cover the spread. All right, prediction score, Matthew.
Maybe I'm just still down in the dumps.
You are, but it's okay.
But I look at a Middle Tennessee State team that they've scored a lot of points, and not necessarily against real quality opponents, okay, but they've scored some real serious points.
They stink.
And what's that?
They stink.
Yeah, they may not be fantastic, but I think we still have some work to do. And I'm going to go ahead. I can't believe I'm going to do this. Am I really going to do this?
I don't know. What are you about to do?
Middle Tennessee State wins 28-27.
Have you been hanging out with Brian Logan? I think he predicted them. You guys are crazy. Middle Tennessee State is terrible.
They beat Savannah State 61-7. I am looking forward to see how the transitive properties of common opponents play out here. You want to talk about a team that's lost motivation. How'd you like to be Savannah State right now? You've lost every single game this year. You have a real possibility of showing up to Provo for your last game of the season with 0 wins.
There's
a demoralized team.
And not only have they lost in all but maybe 2 of these games, you were never really in it.
No. 83-9.
Against Georgia Southern?
Yeah.
Georgia Southern is a good FCS team. Or are they FBS now?
I don't think they're FBS now.
No, they're in the Sun Belt.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, they are FBS
they're,
now.
I mean, it's a, they're a program.
They're okay. I mean, they lost to NC State by one and almost beat Georgia Tech. Not great teams, but I mean, but 83-9. Holy cow. Okay, so I am predicting a BYU victory 35-28.
Ooh.
35-28. I don't think their defense will be able to stop us. And while they will do enough on offense, I don't think, I mean, they will do okay on offense because our defense just isn't that good. I do predict that we do not turn the ball over on offense. Not once. And that's the difference.
Not a single time, huh?
No turnovers on offense. And we get at least one on defense. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Hey, you know what? I hope you're right. I'm not going to lie to you.
Hey, do I have goggles on right now? Blue glasses?
Maybe, just a
little
bit.
Very possible. So, Matt, let's move off of BYU football because it's depressing. College football in general, the top four came out for the new college football playoff rankings. Three SEC teams. Do you have any problem with the top four as it now stands? Knowing that it's all going to change because some of these teams play each other and everything. But Florida State, quite frankly, is not likely to lose again. So they're probably in this. But looking at that four, do you have a problem with any of the four? Mississippi State, they deserve to be there?
I would have a hard time pulling them out of there.
Yep. Florida State? I
kind of feel the same way.
I don't feel the same way about them. I think they would get beat by, on a neutral field, I think they would get beat by everybody in this top 10. I think they get beat by Notre Dame on a neutral field. I think, maybe not Kansas State. I think TCU beats them on a neutral field. I think Bama, Oregon, Ole Miss, Auburn, Mississippi State kill them on a neutral field. But I might be wrong. Auburn deserved to be there?
No, I would pull our Auburn out.
I would, too. I would rather have Oregon in there than Auburn. Ole Miss?
I also wouldn't put Ole Miss in there. I think in a neutral field, or looking at what happened to them last weekend, I
think they end up having three losses by the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I do not think this four is not going to look the same. Alabama looks motivated, speaking of motivation. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if they went out. TCU's story is heartbreaking this year, if you're a Horned Frog fan, because that loss to Baylor, which was a crazy game, they have pretty much, you know, they beat Oklahoma in a close game and lost to Baylor in a close game, and they have dominated everybody else.
But the good news is, if you're TCU... Okay, you've still got West Virginia and Kansas State on your schedule.
Yes,
okay, that's two ranked teams.
And in Morgantown, if you go into Morgantown and win, that is going to be bolster the resume.
That's right. And I think beating Kansas State will bolster the resume. And then
yes, absolutely.
They'll take care of business in Kansas, Texas, and Iowa State.
Texas is terrible.
Yeah.
They're just bad. Like, that win that we had against them is looking worse and worse as time goes by, you know?
So I think what happens there is that if TCU can take care of business in those games, Ole Miss won't. And then one of Florida State or Auburn will also get tripped up. Your TCU, you've still got a very legitimate shot
of getting
yourself into that top four.
And then they don't have the obstacle of a conference championship game.
That's right.
But if you look at Mississippi State, for example, Arkansas, UT Martin... But they still have to go to Alabama and the rivalry game at Ole Miss. I mean, the SEC, as much as we like on this podcast to kind of make fun of them, it is a tough conference this season.
Okay.
Maybe the best SEC season in recent memory. But I still hope and want that there aren't three SEC teams in this first football playoff.
It just seems lame.
It is. To me, it is completely lame. Two, fine. Three is just ridiculous. Put in, if Oregon wins out, they should be in there. If TCU wins out, they should be in there. And if Florida State wins out, they should be in there. And that's three, right? But like you said, I don't think it's likely that Florida State, Oregon, and TCU all went out, right? Somebody in there is going to lose something, and obviously the SEC teams are going to beat each other up. Well, Matt, we have one last tweetback question, which we're going to get out on, which is, where is it? Yes, from Jed Higgy on Twitter. Snake draft of the top three movies you're most looking forward to from the Marvel movies that were announced yesterday. By the way, this was one of the greatest days of my life.
Oh, jeez.
As a geek, this was looking out at all these awesome Marvel movies coming, Matt. The Black Panther, which, by the way, I've got a little pet peeve. CNN this morning, I was in the airport watching, which is the only time I ever watch CNN, and the woman said that that Black Panther was the first African-American superhero. Do you know what the problem with that is, Matt?
It's not true.
It's not true. He's from Africa. He's not African-American. He's African.
Yeah.
He's African. He's not African-American. Like, is he the first black superhero? I don't even know if that's true. I'd have to look that up. But he's definitely not the first African-American superhero because he's, in the story, from Africa. So,
well, is part of the story his gaining citizenship in the United States?
I don't believe so, but I haven't.
That's not part of the backstory or anything.
I haven't seen a script. They did not. They did not do that. So, Matt,
because sometimes they make adjustments.
So, I'm going to expand the draft. All superhero movies that have been announced. We're looking at a graphic from ComicsAlliance.com, where we'll both be drafting from. So this includes the DC movies, which I believe many of which won't actually be made, but we can still draft them. So anything from two that's due out in 2015 and beyond, and because I'm such an awesome guy, I will give you first pick.
Wow. I get first pick, huh?
First pick.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and with the first pick of our draft here, I'm going to select the untitled Batman movie from Warner Brothers that is to be released in year unknown.
That is lame.
You're lame. Batman is awesome.
Batman is awesome. And I actually think, as we've talked about multiple times on this podcast, I think Ben Affleck's going to do an excellent job.
Yep.
I, with my first pick, and this is a snake draft, so I get two in a row, will take next year's Avengers Age of Ultron, mainly because that trailer was one of the greatest 2 minutes of my life.
Looks pretty good.
It looks really good. They know what they're doing, Matt. They absolutely know what they're doing. And then I'm going to take 2016. I'm going to leave some good ones on the board for you. X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, wow.
I am very much looking forward to that one, Matt. So I've picked two. You've picked one. You get to pick your final two. You've got untitled Batman movie, which you could have had with your third pick. But hey,
Like a team will walk into a draft and they're not worried about who the best player in the draft is. They know what they want, and that's what I
and
was.
That's
with
great.
My first.
That's great. I'm glad that you were able to get a terrible potential movie for your pick. Go ahead.
All right. So with my second pick, I'm going to take Batman vs Superman: Dawn of Justice, due out in 2016.
Yes, excellent. March 2016, I believe.
March 25th, 2016.
There you go.
So, and I think everybody saw that one coming.
Yes. I thought that was going to be your first pick. So,
I was worried that you were going to take it with your first
not
pick.
Even close.
But I appreciate you leaving it on the board.
Did you see Man of Steel?
Yes.
Yes, I'm not picking that one with any of my picks. Okay. My faith in Zack Snyder is I didn't hate Man of Steel, but it does not hold a candle to those Chris Nolan Batman movies. Nor to the Avengers, most of the Avengers Marvel movies. So, go ahead. Your final pick.
I'm going to stay in 2016.
Ooh.
And I think this is going to be a surprise pick because originally this isn't where I was going to go. I'm going to go ahead and take Captain America: Civil War.
Oh, that was going to be my third pick.
Yep.
So, do you know the storyline behind the Civil War storyline in the comic books?
I read a little bit about it this the other day, but I'm guessing you know a little bit more about it than I do.
Most likely. It is an awesome storyline from several years back in which Captain America and Iron Man basically go head-to-head.
Yes.
So I'm not going to put too many spoilers because, number one, I don't know how they're going to actually run it. But in the comics, the government wants all superheroes to register with the government. And Captain America is the leader of the group that opposes that. And you can see the seeds for that were already planted in the Winter Soldier Captain America movie already.
Yep.
And in the getting a lot more excellent Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. So with my third pick, you stole one from right out from under me, Matt. But as I look
out, I'm curious to see if you're going to take what I almost picked.
Well, I am tempted to take Guardians of the Galaxy 2, due out in 2017, but I'm not going to pick that. I was not tempted to pick any of the Spider-Man movies that are slated, because they're going to be terrible, if they even happen. I am actually going to take Avengers Infinity War 2, due out in 2019. They're planning on having a two-part Avengers movie back-to-back years, 2018, 2019, in May. I'm going to take the second one of those with all due respect to several of these other movies of which I am completely stoked about, including the aforementioned Black Panther. Did you ever see Chronicle?
No.
Josh Trank directed a kind of super-powered thing. He's doing the new Fantastic Four movie. I'm a little bit excited about those, but because of how good he did with Chronicle, but still a little bit worried. Anything else on this list? What was the one you were going to pick?
Wolverine 3.
Yeah, I do like Wolverine movies, except for the one that we just pretend doesn't exist. Well, at least the second half of it. But yeah, the Wolverine 3 would be good. And you know, I could be totally wrong about this Batman vs. Superman movie. And maybe some of these DC comic movies will be better than I think they're going to be. We'll see.
And yeah, you know, and then I am interested to see how they do with the Flash.
Yes.
And I think there's some real potential with Venom, Carnage.
There could be if they can still do those. But what I would say, Matt, is there's been a lot of discussion among fans of these movies, fans of comic books, just movie watchers in general, is with all these superhero movies, do you think that half of these don't happen because people just get there's too much superhero stuff?
No.
I don't either.
And we've talked about this before. I think they're catering to, I mean, when you look at the target demographic for these types of things, who spends money on this?
Everybody, but definitely a lot of geeky guys in their 20s, 30s, and 40s.
That's right. And who in the economy is going to go to see movies?
Geeky guys in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. And 40s. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and so guys who are now in those ages grew up with this stuff.
Well, and these
and
movies
love this stuff.
And these movies have done, most of them, exceptionally well outside of the United States.
Yep.
I mean, the Avengers has been huge outside of the U.S. Guardians of the Galaxy did pretty well. Not as well as the Avengers. I think part of that is, you saw Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
No, I did not.
Oh, you did not. That's because you're not as cool as I am.
I don't see a ton of movies.
I know. There were a lot of 80s music references, 70s, 80s music references that are very American, right? So I think some of the humor and stuff in Guardians of the Galaxy was not as applicable as a green rage monster smashing a god of mischief into cement. I mean, everyone can appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want that?
That's universal. So, well, anyway, Matt, that's been our podcast for this week. We will definitely be back next week, hopefully to be talking about a BYU victory. Definitely check out excellent football coverage at LoyalCougars.com. Next time we'll try to squeeze in some basketball talk as well. Thanks for downloading, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!